I really think I was born to be the connector of the unconnected. I think that I've been able to develop this ability to actually spot the greatness in people and put it out there, help them put it out there.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion, and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools, and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion, and purpose. You are about to hear a conversation with Angel Rebo. Now, he was born in Spain in a small town just outside Barcelona. Angel Rebo is known as the CEO Confident. He heads a consultancy for international business expansion and the charity teaching entrepreneurship to kids in Latin America. Angel's first love was languages, and it was an early factor in his future success. And he speaks Spanish, Catalan, French, English, and Portuguese. He went to college in the big city of Barcelona to study engineering and computer coding. Now, college life was good. He got his degree, but he realized pretty early on that this was not the career for him. During college, he volunteered at the 1992 Olympics and was part of the team managing the scoring and the stats for the volleyball competition. That was where he discovered the joy of working in teams as part of a bigger project. Out of college, having established software and coaching were not for him, he looked for work, and the universe helped. He took on the role of international relations at his college, a perfect opportunity to use his language skills and to travel. The big break for Angel came when he was headhunted by an audiovisual projects company in Barcelona. It meant more project work, teamwork, and working with creative professionals. His degree was put to good use in 1999 when he moved to the UK and found work with an international company selling software and training. Living in the UK and working for a US company opened the doors to sales, networking, and lots of travel. Over the last 21 years, Angel has empowered more than 1,500 CEOs in 33 different countries. He's a public speaker, CEO consultant, board member, philanthropist, and he has lived in 8 countries. He has 2 missions in life. One is the non-profit Wisdom for Kids. There are 81 million children living in poverty in Latin America, and Wisdom for Kids has already supported over 1,000 families, and half of his coaching fees go straight to that organization. His second mission is connected to the first, and it's to inspire CEOs to give back to the world. Our conversation is a journey of exploration, travel, and discovery. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Angel Rebo. So delighted to be with Angel Rebo, and he is the CEO Confident. So I guess that will need a little unpacking, as we do with all of our guests. Angel, thank you for being here today with me. Where are you in the world?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you to all the audience who's listening to us today. I am right now in Dallas, Texas, in the US.
Nice part of the world. So, yes, Angel, how did you get to where you are today? This is all about passion and things connected with it. How did you get to be where you are as the CEO Confident?
Well, I think it's a combination of a lot of many different things. Probably number one, to be always open to embrace opportunities, always thinking that, you know, there's not such thing as a definite destination for me. I always thought that the next step in my life was wherever the opportunity would present itself. Probably it helped a lot to learn languages very early on. I learned English and French, besides obviously my mother tongue, you know, Spanish and Catalan. Mm-hmm. And also eventually I learned Portuguese as well. So I think that all those things helped me a lot. And then also the fact that I studied computer engineering, and then that was my major. And then, I also studied a master's in business administration. I think that all those things helped me a lot to, you know, navigate for many different seas and wanting to always, you know, be a little bit of an adventurer. so and go to different places.
Let's go back a bit and unpack some of that stuff, because I mean, it's quite a long journey there. And clearly, where were you born? Where was home for you?
I was born in Lleida. It's called. It's a town near Barcelona, 1 hour southeast of Barcelona, southeast, in the middle of the Mediterranean. Yeah. And I lived there through my high school, and then when I was 17 years old, I moved to Barcelona for my computer engineering degree. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was already some scholarships to go there. So since I was in college, I was already traveling abroad and having those experiences in other countries and being used to interact with people from all over the world, literally. I was exposed to communism, you know, for the first time in my life, actually, when I was in college. My first scholarship was in Czechoslovakia when it was still communist.
Oh, amazing. It must have been amazing to be in that country at that time.
Totally. Absolutely. I couldn't emphasize it more, actually. And it was funny because we were a group of 25 foreign students from all over the world. I mean, it was the first time for me to meet with someone in Jordan, from someone in Qatar. Again, it was the 80s, Paul. So,
yeah.
And we were in a communist country. And obviously, I mean, I remember my father gave me 300 bucks to spend for over the summer, 300 bucks. Okay, so you take care of those 300 bucks besides what the university, it was an internship in a university, besides of what the university is going to give you. Oh my God, those $300 gave me, like, you know, really so much, such a long runaway, to put it this way.
With that sort of money in the 80s in that country, you'd have been a king.
Absolutely. And you know, it was funny because I was exchanging my money like by bits, you know. So I would exchange $20 today and then $20 down the road, and I would still, I mean, I remember that one of the things I did when I left, when I finished my internship, I invited the whole department. Literally, we were like 20 or 30 people I invited. And that cost me probably like $15 or $20 to the best restaurant of the best hotel of that town. Mm. I will never forget that. So that was quite an experience. And that was actually the first communist country I've ever lived in. And it was very nice.
So what drove you to engineering? What was the passion about engineering? What was driving you there?
Well, to be honest, I was really good in computers when I was in high school. Yeah. I remember that it was, you know, I was one of those that would stay at the computer lab in the high school, like for longer. I really loved coding. I mean, it was really a big passion of mine. And then my father bought us an Apple IIc at home. And then again, you know, playing games and coding in BASIC and in Prolog. I don't know if you remember that language, Prolog, and many other languages. And it was, again, I liked it so much that when I had to decide where to go next, probably thinking of what's going to be the profession of the future, right? What could help me more for the future? I chose that because I liked it. But very early on, I found out that I really didn't like it much. And you know, but I was already there, and I wanted to obviously to honor all the investment that my family was putting behind me. So I persevered, and you know, eventually I got a degree, you know, at the same time I got that international experience I told you before. Mm-hmm. So when I finished college, and including, by the way, being part of the Barcelona 1992 Olympics, that was also a highlight of my, I was actually in charge of, it was one of the three volunteers, all of us three, like having already experience in computer engineering, three volunteers. So we were not paid by the Olympic Committee to run the results of the volleyball venues for the 1992 Barcelona Olympics. It was, as you can imagine, it was a blast. I mean,
I'm sure it must have been a lot of fun seeing so much of a blast, and what an amazing thing to put on the CV.
Yeah. Well, would you believe that I've never put it on my CV ever? Actually, it's not even on my CV on LinkedIn.
Why?
Yeah. I mean, because it was so normal for me and for us, you know, and it's funny because in order to be able to have that position, even if it was a volunteer, as you can imagine, there were thousands and thousands of people wanted to have that position. I was 2 years, every single Saturday. I mean, that was a project. I mean, that was a thorough project. I mean, no wonder it went so well. I mean, really, the outcome was really amazing. I mean, we really did it very, very, very well. I mean, but I was every single Saturday for 2 years going to any sort of volleyball event there was in the Barcelona area. I mean, it was just amazing. And we built that team of people that basically we were, you know, my team was basically in charge of, you know, reading the statistics. So it was a team of people that really know about the sport, and also people that were behind the screens, behind the computers, writing down the statistics. Because, you know, volleyball is, as many other sports, is very rich in the statistics, you know, in the stats. So we had to be like really, really focused and learning and how to do it, and what was, you know, what was a block and what was an attack and what was, you know, a defense and everything. It was an incredible experience. And obviously we were exposed to the top, you know, volleyball players in the world, to the top volleyball teams. And at the same time, being volunteers, we were given tickets to other venues. So we were able to go and watch. I remember watching soccer and swimming and obviously track and field.
Yeah, that must have been an amazing event in terms of for you, because the experience you would have got doing the team thing, I'm sure that experience paid it back over the years, because you learned to work with a large team and creating stuff.
Yeah, and we were very much in touch with the computer the company that got like the big contract for, you know, for all the computer infrastructure for the games was actually an American company. It's Electronic Data Systems, that was a spin-off of General Motors. And it's funny how I eventually, where I live today here in the north of Dallas, I live where the headquarters of that company has been forever. It's called, again, EDS. Eventually they became HP. Yeah. And now, you know, yeah, exactly. So they're consulting, HP Consulting.
But so anyway, you got this amazing experience and you've got this degree and you now can do the computer stuff, and it didn't inspire you anymore.
No. After my second semester, I said, this is not for me. Technical stuff is not for me. As much as I like everything, I like coding and programming and I like physics and algebra and everything, this is not for me, honestly. And probably my fellow students, college mates, could tell you the same thing. I mean, I started to be more engaged and more like happy about my studies, my college studies, as I was progressing. Because as you know, when you get to further, you know, further levels, you know, when you go to, you know, more advanced, you know, level in your career and in your college degree, the subjects become more, you know, more interesting, more information systems, more stochastic processes, like more specialized, but also more interesting, you know, kind of subjects. Yeah. And I liked it more. So actually I liked more the last, and I had better grades on my last, you know, subjects during my career, during my college degree, mm-hmm. than in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I mean, actually, to be honest, I think that my only jobs, part-time jobs, on computers themselves, like programming, coding, or similar stuff, were only until I got my degree. As soon as I got my degree, actually, my first real job was for the dean's office. What is called here will be called in the dean's office here in the U.S. or the mm-hmm. president's office in Europe. It's called the rector's office. So the rector's office of my own college, they had inside the rector's office, there was a small group of people devoted to international relations. And oh my God, I loved it. Like working in international relations for my own university, getting to know so many people in the entire organization, but also abroad. They would go to Europe all the time, you know, to Switzerland, to the UK, to France. I would go to Latin America, eventually to the US. I mean, it was really a blast. I had a great, 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 you know, experience there. And it's funny because I still keep in touch with who was the chief of staff of the rector at that time. Like, we still keep in touch with him.
That's nice. That's sweet, isn't it? Obviously, you built an amazing connection. And I guess that's, again, you're very much a networker by the sounds of it.
I am. I mean, I consider myself to be, and that's something sometimes when someone asks me, hey, what do you do, Angel? But don't tell me what your resume says. Don't tell me what your, you know, LinkedIn profile says. Tell me something else. I always say the same thing. I say two things. One is I really think I was born to be the connector of the unconnected, mm-hmm. the connector and the unconnected. And the second thing I always say is, for some reason, I've been put in a position to be the conduit of everybody else's greatness. Ooh. Of everybody else's greatness. I think that I've been able to develop this ability to actually spot the greatness in people and put it out there, help them put it out there, so they can really make a living, or at least they can be someone else besides what they were supposed to do according
That's
to their professional
career. That's a
lovely
quality to have, because most people, a lot of people, find it really hard to pinpoint where their best bits are.
Mm-hmm.
That is really good. That's a good one, amazing quality.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
You moving forward, you obviously somehow you landed in the US and you ended up there. What was that story?
Yeah. So the story was, so when I ended up, when I was in the university working for the rector, blah, 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 international programs, a headhunter came and said, hey, I have this amazing position in the private sector. This is the top leading company for audiovisual productions in Barcelona and in Spain. We would do a great job here taking care of this position. The position was projects. Depending to the COO of the company, I would be in charge of coordination of projects.
Mm.
And it was audiovisual projects. So I was sitting next to engineers, next to creative directors, art directors. So all these amazing, animals, I would say, you know, I mean, everybody with so many different backgrounds and expectations in life and everything. I mean, me included, obviously. And from there, I saw in the newspaper, I saw an ad to go to work in the UK for an American company.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when I was at that audiovisual company, I wasn't able to use French or English. But when I saw that, I said, oh, my God, this is a great position. This is a great opportunity for me. And this is exactly what I did. So I went to the interview in Madrid. I went to from where I was living, from Barcelona to Madrid, and I got the job. I mean, I as you can imagine, and your podcast name is very accurate. Life passion. I've been really living my life passionately. So I think that gave me my wild card for the UK. And then I mean, just a matter. I think that was at the end of what? 90 something, 90, maybe 97
mm-hmm.
or something, 98. And in the beginning of 98, I was already in the UK working for this amazing company.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first ever assignment, let's say, in sales. So I went from relationships to sales. So I was doing like sales calls all day long. I was in charge of a part of Europe and I was making, you know, sales calls, basically, you know. And my main goal was to set up appointments and to close deals for the field reps, for the field representatives, sales representatives of that company.
Mm.
And I remember I was so passionate about it, and I loved it so much that my bosses kept on giving me additional territories I could call into. And I remember originally for something Spain, then it was Portugal. I was able to speak a little bit of Portuguese.
What were you selling out of interest?
It was technology. It was basically software services around software training, consulting, these kind of things.
Mm.
And I was doing it so well that actually they gave me Germany, and I wasn't able to speak any German besides something that I had learned from.
It's a bit
from
strange. A country where you can't speak the language.
But I had dated a German girl for a while, and actually I was still dating a German girl. I would meet with her, so I knew some German. So I started calling German accounts, speaking a little bit of German and a little bit, and obviously English. And it went very, very well. It was really great. It went really, really well. And then they gave me the Nordic countries and I started calling Denmark. And I started to be acquainted with these super high tech companies in Denmark that do amazing stuff. And, you know, it was such an amazing experience. I mean, to be sitting down in the UK, but making phone calls and developing relationships with people with C-levels, so that they would give me appointments for my field sales reps in those countries that would go there and would go there and close the deal or, you know, take the purchase order.
I think the advantage you had at the time is in the 90s is that the internet wasn't that well developed. It was there, it existed, but it wasn't as it developed as, and so telephone sales was still the way to go. It was still possible to get good connections and actually get through to people on the phone. I think today you'd find that really hard to do that.
Yes, I have. I mean, I from time to time I make, you know, calling, and I don't mind doing it. I just, you know, it's just a habit, right? I mean, I myself obviously get a lot of phone calls. You probably do as well. I mean, I remember when I moved to the US, something that really surprised me was the amount of phone calls I would get as soon as my phone number was at some system, at some vendor of some sort, immediately my email address, excuse me, my phone number would become like public and everybody would call me. But regardless, you know, to your point, yeah, I was really good in making phone calls. I remember doing those call blitzes. There was once a week, we will do cold call blitzes, mm-hmm. which means that there was a competition in place and all the team that we were doing, you know, the sales account managers out of the UK, we would have a call blitz and whoever made the most calls and got the most appointments in that day, that person would win an award, a prize. Mm-hmm. So, and that was so much fun. And, you know, this day we had pizza and we would work, we would come in early and we would, you know, we would be staying there late and then we would go all together to a restaurant. But again, you know, when you start doing something for fun, suddenly it's not so complicated anymore, you know? It's fun. So it means that you're really making the most of it. And, you know, if someone rejects you, if one of those gatekeepers just say no, or, you know, they just don't want and they hang up on you, it's okay. You know, it is what it is. You're there to do a job. And, you know, I mean, their job is as respectful as mine. It's as honorable as mine, you know? Yeah. So it's just a matter of wanting to do it and having fun doing it.
So obviously, I guess you moved to the States having got on this company at some stage, I guess.
No, actually, I went to Mexico, actually. I asked for, so it was in 2001 that I went for a vacation to Latin America. And when I came back, I said, hey, I would like to go to work in Latin America. I think that there's something there for me. And they looked for a job for the same company. Again, we were a large, large corporation. And they said, yeah, I mean, to be honest, they told me, you're crazy. Why do you want to go to a third world country when you're doing so well here in London? I mean, you have a great job, great, you know, great salary. You have a great future. Why on earth do you want to go somewhere, you know, to a third world country? You're kind of, you know, this is like breaking your career. And I said, no, but, you know, culturally speaking, I'm sure that there's a lot of things that I have to learn and I would love to do it. I really would love to do it. And yeah, 3 months later, I was already in Mexico. That was in February 2001. In May, I was already in Mexico. They already helped me relocate. And I had a great time there. I was there for 10 years. And 10 years ago, I came here to Dallas. That's how I ended up in Dallas.
So what has been the driver of all this? Is it the connections, the passion for you? Is it the connection with people? Is it the selling process? What was it? What was always the bit that drove you in all of this?
I think that always the great opportunities have presented to me. I think that's probably the case. You know, when I moved from the UK to Mexico, I worked for that company still 2-3 more years, and then I left that company, started working for another company from a Spain's based company, but representing technologies in Mexico. And then in 2005, I got another job in one of my earlier former employers' competitor. And so if you ask me, I think that I'm number one. I mean, every time that there has been an opportunity, I do great in interviews. I mean, really, to be honest. So I've been able to really pick those amazing pearls and diamonds that show up in front of me and really like say, this is me, this is mine, you know, I'm gonna get this one.
But
what is it
about those pearls that you, that is your passion for you? You know, I can understand you.
It's
exciting over the job and that sort of thing, but what is it that's exciting? Because there must be something in this.
Yeah, because it was always, I mean, sales has always had for me a special flavor, you know, like, you know, you are able to work on a team, and with that team, you are able to put in front of someone a proposal, right? What is called in sales, a value proposition, which is, you know, which is compelling enough for them to buy. That has always fascinated me. For me to be able to change the future of another company or another organization through the use of technology. But to be honest, the most fascinating part of that was the interaction. Was the personal interaction, was to start from the bottom of the organization, to have all those conversations with everybody, to gain this trust from all of them, and then eventually to reach the C-level executives again to close those deals.
Yeah.
It's it's really amazing when you see yourself thriving through an organization, you know. And really, this was really what ignited me to call my brand the CEO Confident, because when I started counting how many C levels and how many CEOs I had helped with their businesses through the technologies I was selling, through the services, how I was able to suggest to them different routes that they could take their businesses through.
Yeah.
You know, I said, oh my God, this is really what I have done. You know what, that when you enjoy so much the ride that you forgot what you have really done?
Ah, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, that you are enjoying everything so much that you never stopped and said, wow, this is everything I've done. And you know, when people along the road, along my journey, were telling me, oh, Angel, that's fascinating. I mean, we want to be with you. We want to be next to you. We want your help. We want you to come with us to close those deals, blah, blah, blah. But still, Paul, you're so much into serving that wave.
Yeah.
That you stay there until suddenly, until suddenly you leave corporate America and you said, where am I? Where are those waves? You know, where are those places? Where are those people? You know, so I have always been in that space of helping a lot of people, helping a lot of people to help me support organizations to be, you know, to start big processes of change.
Yeah.
And again, as you see, sometimes some people ask me, Paul, if you could do something different in your professional life, what would you do? And actually, that's a piece of advice I've always given my kids is make sure that your Rolodex was always, your Rolodex of contacts was always up to date. Mm-hmm. You cannot imagine how many times I have thought, oh my God, I wish I had taken down all that information. I had remembered, I had kept the connection with all these people because I consider myself, and I'm still a good connector, but if I had treasured more all those relationships, Paul, oh my God, today, my Rolodex, really? Mm. Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine all those CEOs I spoke in the 90s?
Yeah. Where are they now? Yeah, absolutely. Chief executive.
Exactly. Where are they now? And I'm sure that they'll remember me because, you know, who was that crazy Spaniard calling in Spanish to a German account? Who was that crazy guy? They will remember me, honestly.
So somewhere this all stopped. You changed. You leapt out of corporate America. What happened?
Well, what happened is that, oh my God, you know, I mean, I can do so many things. So what am I going to do, right? So because I can do so many things, right? I mean, I can take those many different courses of action.
Yeah.
Which one? So I was confused. I mean, to be honest, I was confused. I didn't know what was the best path to take. I had prepared my exit. So I had already attended some conferences. I had started to learn.
But what was the catalyst for leaving? Why did you decide you need to leave?
Well, actually, it was a combination, right? Number one, I wanted to spend more time with my family. Number two, I have always worked with leaders that have really taught me something, right? And you know, when you perceive that you're not growing, when you perceive that what you're saying is not, it's not heard, when you're perceived that politics are much more important than the productivity itself, when you don't genuinely care for other people and you are not rewarded for genuinely care for other people, there's something wrong there.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a combination of different things. And again, I mean, I'm not saying it was right or wrong. I mean, it's just what it is. And I think that everything in life happens for a reason. You know, and I have to be extremely grateful for every single person and organization that has given me the opportunity to grow with them. But, you know, I mean, I was the one that would spend literally 14, 15, 16 hours a day consistently for years. I mean, for 5, 6, 10 years. I mean, that's who I was. And I enjoyed every single minute of that experience.
But as you say, 14 hours a day is not really conducive to family life, is it?
No. And also when you're traveling, that's even worse because I was traveling all the time. Even when I was living here in the US, I was traveling all the time. All the time I was traveling, you know, so it was very important for me to be able to find a balance. And, you know, obviously there's things happening in the family and you realize that probably one of the reasons why those things are happening is because you are not present and fully present all the time.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, life passion is important, but also life passion is as important as the family is important for you.
Well, it's all part of it to me. I mean, you know, I think that's the point, isn't it? We get to the point where we realize there is no bridge, there's no gap. See, people talk about life and work balance. I don't see a gap between life and work balance. It's just balance. It's just life.
I couldn't agree more with you. People are trying to. I was just having we have in Clubhouse. We have a room every week on purpose-driven leadership. Purpose-driven leadership. Obviously, you are more than invited to join us in any discussion because we have people actually from Europe joining, and we were just having the exact same conversation. I don't understand life like. There's this, you know, department here called private life, and then there's this other department which is family life, and then there's this other department called friend life, and then there's this other department of son's life, and then there's this other department like sibling life. You know, that doesn't exist. You're always the same, and all those, you know, lives just, you know, interlap. You know, they're all have these gray areas, and so you are the same, dealing with maybe. Different boxes that you've put yourself into, but in reality, you are the only box. You see the world as you are. My perception is my reality, and we can be both of us. We can be looking at the same landscape and see different things.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it is what it is. And I think that finding the right balance between the different roles in your life is very important.
So you jumped out of corporate America and you jumped into your own business.
Yes, I jumped into my own business and into my own charity as well, because besides building my consulting firm, you know, today we're already like 12 people. Besides that, we also started a nonprofit, and you know, I had this experience that taught me exactly that, you know, I wanted to help underprivileged kids in Latin America become entrepreneurs using the local resources. And with two friends of mine, or with a friend of mine and his father, we founded Wisdom for Kids in late 2017. And that was the beginning of an incredible journey, which is going to Latin America to help those kids in need. I mean, just to put this into perspective, in Latin America, there are 170 million kids. There were 170 million kids in 2012. This is UNICEF data. 81 million kids live in poverty. And 22 million of them don't have drinking water, Paul. They don't have drinking water. So, you know, right now you're sipping your coffee. So they have to save their water because they have to actually go and, you know, pick the water from somewhere or have it delivered somehow if they have the money to pay the delivery.
Yeah.
So that's the reality, you know. So the situation is really bad. So, and I had traveled so much throughout the entire continent, Latin American continent, that they became so aware of the poverty. And I developed all those relationships with so many companies and powerful people in those corporations that I said, yes, let's do this. Let's try to help with my humble knowledge. Let's try to help underprivileged kids as much as I can.
And how is that going? Is that a new charity? Did you open as a brand new charity?
Yeah. It was a brand. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the president and co-founder of Wisdom for Kids. And we have already helped more than 1,000 kids.
So what is it that you do in your consultancy now? The charity obviously helps the kids. What's the consultancy do? Are you selling?
Yeah. So basically what we do. Yes. Basically, I have two distinct audiences, both corporate CEOs and established entrepreneurs. They hire me to bridge the gap globally for expansion and exposure. I had dealt with more than 1,500 companies and their C-level executives to accelerate the growth of their businesses. So when I became my own boss, what I started to do is, because I had done business, those 1,500 companies were in more than 33 countries.
Wow.
You know, mainly in the Americas and in Europe. So what I do for a living is actually helping companies right now to move internationally. That's what I do, help them move internationally. So that's why I consider my work two things. There's this part of exposure and this part of expansion being business development, finding new clients, selling, setting up new distribution channels, these kind of things, and exposure, which is marketing. How do you connect with the people in that particular geography that you want to go? Yes, how do you connect?
Because moving internationally is actually quite a big thing, isn't it? I mean, you've got to establish a bridgehead. I mean, obviously it's best to establish a partnership rather than trying to do it yourself in some ways.
That's a great question. Exactly. We tend to think that we are in the internet and everything is global. And right now, just 12 months ago, we had the example, something happened in one part of the world and suddenly every single person in the world was under the same kind of circumstances. Mm. But it's not true. Going international, it's not just we have the internet and we start publicizing or advertising to that area. It's not like this, not at all. Even if it's difficult to move physically as human beings, going to another area means that you have to adapt yourselves, your products and services to what the consumers in that particular area want. And this, developing a strategy, a partnership strategy is a good thing, but obviously, what I bring to the table is I have already developed those relationships and those partnerships before. So I already know who the trustworthy relationships and partnerships might be for that company that wants to work with me, if that makes sense.
So, yeah.
Exactly. So
you bring a resource to the table for them. That's what you do.
Exactly. And for me, obviously, it's much easier also if I'm going to an industry that I haven't been before, it's much easier for me to actually tap onto the genius of someone else in that country, because I already know so many companies in that country. Literally, in all those countries, I know people that are friends of mine or have been business partners of mine, or I know companies there. So again, all those things, that's why I said before, you know, if I had to regret something of my past, would be probably, you know, keeping much more.
Would be very valuable now, wouldn't it? In your
much more, exactly. So I'm happy with what I have, but you know, it's always much easier to start a relationship with someone that you have already had a relationship before.
Well, it's been an interesting, it's fascinating to hear your story and your journey. So now we move into the kind of thing. Clearly, you have a very strong success model. What is that? What is it for you? What's your definition of success?
Well, the definition for success is actually freedom. How free I am. How free I am to dictate what I'm going to do tomorrow, the next week, or the next month.
Yeah.
That's for me success. Success is really being the owner, the fully and unique owner of my time, given any period of time ahead of me. Yeah. Really, that's for me success. That's the best definition for success.
And has it always been that?
That's a great question. Probably not. I think that before, when I was by myself, before I had my family, before I got married, before I had kids, it was probably different, because I saw freedom so close to me, because at any point in time, I could decide, boom, I go to another country, I go to another city, I go to another place, you know? So probably for me, success was more like having more resources to do specific things. And right now, it's not as important the resources, but the time to do them. Before, I was like, I felt really free. I mean, it's not that I'm not free, but as you know, when you get married and you have kids, your level of responsibility with the world increases, right?
I also wonder, actually, if it's a product of getting older, because as we get older, you know, I mean, I suspect I'm older than you, but not much, not by much. But what I do recognize is that I've got less time left than I have lived so far, possibly.
Well, guess what? I don't think so about myself. So regardless of my age, which I could agree with you, actually, I think I'm going to be living in this world for many more years than the years I've lived today. Okay. So I really consider I have not even reached the equator of my life.
Okay.
So I know that the best, everything, all my failures, all my flaws, all my mistakes, all my achievements so far have been really the springboard, you know, for me to what I have to do for the rest of my life.
Well, I'm not saying I won't achieve anymore. What I'm getting at is the end is coming. You know, the end is over there somewhere and it's starting to be visible.
but maybe, you know what? Now that you're asking me about this, I've never been so much in peace with death than I am today.
Yeah.
Never, ever. Like, I was much more afraid of dying before than now.
Yeah.
So, and you know, when a lot of people define, you know, how rich you are or how wealthy you are by how much you can maybe help others or how much with what you have today you can generate altogether.
Yeah.
So for me, it's funny how, again, when you ask me, you know, what was my definition of success, I think that wealth and success come hand to hand. And I think that everything that I've been doing so far in my life, everything that they've been doing is just preparing for the big exposure and the big, you know, becoming a bridge and a connector in a massive way with so many people. Mm. And, you know, I've as anybody else, you know, while we could do these things personally, face to face, I would go to a lot of networking events, right? A lot of networking events.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you would meet with so many people and you would have all so many conversations, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? In reality, it depends on the quality of that relationship that you would develop in that networking event.
Always.
That, exactly. That would end up being somewhere. So I believe that by increasing exposure and the way I'm doing it today, and obviously thank you very much for having me on your show, I think that being, you know, myself, the witness of what I see in the world and what I have seen before is going to help me, you know, propel myself moving forward. So I think that we will see each other for a long time, Paul.
I think we probably will, because I think we probably will. It's this networking thing you talk about today. I don't go to network meetings at the moment, obviously. And I live in a rural area, so networking meetings tend to be a bit less common. But I remember going to some big network meetings, and you can see the super networkers, and they are amazing how they just pass through the room. And it's like, how do you do that? It's so clever how they remember everybody's name, or they remember something about everybody. That, I mean, there is a real network. There's a real skill to that process of people have.
There is. But again, you know, it's when you ask the question, what's the most important skills that we should be taught when we go to school, right?
Yes, one of them.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. Exactly. So that's why, you know, myself, I'm so unconventional in the way that I see the education that my kids received. I have still two kids in the school age, and I always tell the teachers the same thing. You know what the most important thing for me is? It's not the particular subject that you're teaching my kids, but that they really feel loved. And they really feel that they have a connection with you. Mm. The most important thing for me is that my kid develops a connection with you and is able to grasp your real human being and maybe learn and enjoy the subject that you are teaching. But for me, it's not the grade. It's that he feels loved and appreciated every single day when he goes to the classroom. Really.
That's good. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
So moving us on. So look, what about contribution for you? What is your contribution you see?
Yes, I mean, well, number one, I think my contribution is number one is being present every single time I am anywhere. So, you know, now I'm with you. I think that my main duty or debt with humanity is to be myself every single time I show up for some public event like this one today. Yeah. Okay, so my contribution is to just be myself every single time out there and not pretend to be anybody else. With my flaws and with my virtues, you know, that's who I am. That's what I am standing up for. And try to be the most present possible to as many, you know, public events as possible. Because, I mean, again, I know I have probably a pretty unique story to tell. And, you know, we've spoken about many different aspects of my life. But still, being true to myself consistently and putting my word out there, and to try to build bridges and connect people which are unconnected and teach people how to connect in a genuine way without, you know, without really making it about me, but about the relationship. Mm. How do you invest about the relationship and not about you? You know, I think that we have to learn. We should be taught, honestly, about how to collaborate and how to network, how to be really working together hand in hand with someone else. We should be taught that. The same way we should be taught about memory, right? We're talking about this super networkers. There's so many things that we're not taught which are so important, and that so much condition our future success. How many of us, I mean, you probably every time that you read something about the US, we have 350 million people here. How many are in debt? How many actually go paycheck to paycheck? How many? The majority. The majority. Yeah. As a country, is that a success? No, of course it's not a success. So what should we do? Should we still keep them in the payroll of the government? Of course not. We should help them understand how they can escape the rat race without being a rat. Because if you are in the rat race and you're not in the race, but you're still a rat, you're still a rat. So, you know, you have to understand how to get out of the rat race forever. So that's why there are so many entrepreneurs out there, online marketeers that have become so successful.
Yeah.
Because they really have been able to teach this skill, how to, you know, all those missing all those educational gaps that we have as an SPC, you know, they have to be somehow overcome. And these guys fill the gap. They fill the gap. That's why they're so successful.
I would say the one thing that very clearly comes over you, you are all about relationships. Your whole life has been about relationships.
Yes, and I've always been very good friend of my friends. Mm. There's still people I meet today. I mean, nothing makes me more happy than people that I haven't seen for 15 years, and they reach out to me, or 20 years, that reach out to me and say, hey, I still remember that. And today, when we were in the family, we remember you, and we prayed for you, and we have the kids. We explain to the kids who you were to us and what you did for us, blah, 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 you know? So that's priceless. I mean, you asked me about my contribution. That's my contribution.
Well, it is. If you're to be remembered and people are valuing you, that is a massive contribution.
Exactly. And it was always there for me. You know, I remember one time, and that's a very like private personal confession, but I remember I was working so hard in corporate America that one time I was literally going home only one or two days every other week.
Wow.
Every other week. I remember many years after, my wife told me, Angel, I never told you this, but during those times, I thought that you were going to like divorce me, or you were going to go with someone else, or because you really were not present. You were not present, you know? So
see, that is imbalance. That is definitely imbalance of work.
Exactly. But you know that, but she loved me so much. And I guess I loved her so much, but we never had this conversation after many years after, you know, and, you know, we survived and we had two more kids and, you know, all three in total. So I guess, you know, we did something right. And again, you know, it's a matter of it's today what matters, you know, Paul. It's like we are so concerned about the future and remorseful about the past. And it's just having fun now, you know, it's having fun now.
Well, now is the moment of power. You can't, you know, you can do nothing about yesterday or tomorrow.
Exactly. I always like, you know, it's the second time I see you and I'm so blessed to being in your show that, you know, you for those of you, maybe you are listening to us in the podcast, but he has this wonderful, you know, framed, you know, a picture behind him, Paul does, that says spirituality. And it's about an event I think you attended, you told me the other day. And, you know, it really speaks a lot about, you know, what they believe, and it speaks a lot about probably who you are as well, right? That's why you have it there.
Well, it's the event I put on, so that's why it's there. It hasn't, and I need to take it down because it's passed, but it hasn't come down yet. That's why it's just still there. So it was a great event. It was, yeah, I'm not
exactly
gonna, I will and wax you, too lyrical about it.
But you probably met nice people and you learn a few things, and
I learned a lot.
You learned a lot, and that has you know, traveled with you throughout your life.
Yes, it has indeed. So look, tell me, question. What is the one question I haven't asked you yet?
The one question is, if you had to tell, that's a great question. I've never been asked that question. It's funny because I get asked so many questions. Probably the one question is, if you could advise something to humanity, what would be that piece of advice that you would give them?
That's a good question. What was the one piece of advice you would give to humanity if you could give it to them?
Yeah. To take imperfect action now. I think that we overthink everything too much. And I think that our fellow humans, if I can speak in those terms, our fellow humans are the same as us. They have the same fears. They have the same joys. They have the same tough lives. And they need to connect with us. And I think that if we all took action of whatever it is that we want to do, if we just took action, we gave it a try, I think that we would be doing so much more, so many more things. And we would be more focused on what happens inside of us as opposed to what's happening around us.
it's the same, that imperfect action. It's like fail forward, isn't it? Because everything's going to have to, nothing will be perfect. And there will always be bits of it that work and bits of it that don't.
Yeah. But you know, I don't know who invented this word. Well, it's not the word. The word is not to blame. It's not that we have to blame the word failure or failing. It's the meaning that we put to that word.
I know.
You know, because if we had in the dictionary, failure is the synonym of trying, or is the synonym of learning or lesson, guess what? it would be the same thing.
And yet, and you know, and yet we all stood up and fell over, didn't we?
Of course.
And most humans walk. We didn't give up at that point. Oh, sod this walking, Lark. It's not up to much. I'm going to keep crawling.
but have you ever thought why? Probably because our parents or whoever was raising us.
Yeah. Supported
was
us.
Praising us. Exactly.
Yeah.
Was telling us, well done. We were failing, but well done, Angel. Yeah. Well done, Paul. I remember when my second, with my second year old, and oh my God, wasn't he excited? And all the family was with him, and it was a blast. I mean, I remember that moment very, very, very well.
So, I remember those things as well with my own son. So, but I won't go down there because it's just a rabbit hole to travel down. Because we could get into kid stories, and it's amazing. So, look, if people want to connect with you, and who are you looking for? And if they want to connect with you, how would they do that?
Yeah, so I'm basically looking for number one for, you know, established entrepreneurs.
Yep.
Then I'm looking for, you know, C-level executives of corporations.
Yeah.
And as I said before, you know, basically I help them accelerate the growth of their businesses through, you know, bridging the gap globally, you know, for expansion and exposure of their businesses. That's how I do it because of what I have done throughout my entire life. Mm. And the easiest way to connect with me, as you know, I'm very active online, very active on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn. I post every single day. And the easiest way to reach out to me directly, and I have a team of people that's going to respond if it's not myself directly, is to send me an email. It's very easy email. It's angel, as in heaven, angel, A-N-G-E-L, @ angelrebo.com. Rebo is my last name, and it's spelled like R-I-B as in boy, O. So it will be angel @ angelrebo.com. And I guess I said before, I always respond to all emails.
Fantastic. Well, all those links and things will be on the podcast and notes, and also they'll be at our website, Life, Passion, Business. So that'll be there for you.
Thank you.
So the final question I ask all my guests, which is the big question that we all have to deal with, or maybe don't, because a lot of people don't deal with it, but it's nice to get a thought on it from people, is what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose of us being here? Why are you here, Angel?
Thank you. Well, what I have humbly learned for the last few years since I was born, I would say that first, there's a meaning of life, right? That's the first thing. People think that sometimes there's no meaning. I think there's a meaning. And the meaning is that we have to learn something. I think that we have to learn a lot of lessons, and that's why we came here to live this life. And I think that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. And we are here, and regardless of the meaning that we put into the word mistake or failure or failing, it doesn't matter. We are here to learn things. Yeah. And we are here to really have, and not only to learn things, but also to be inspiring the others, to be aware that we are all part of the same.
Yeah.
We are all part of the same. And to feel compassion for someone that maybe, you know, is judging us and is whatever, it doesn't matter, you know, but to still think that we are all part of the same and that we are all the same and we are all came to do similar things. We are going to live different lives. That's what makes us unique. And that's what makes us really ready to offer our products or services in a unique way to clients out there if you want to.
Yeah.
But still, you know, we are all the same. We are all part of the same. And, you know, that's why enjoying every single moment in life, even if it's a tough moment, I think it's really important. Otherwise, I don't believe anybody would send us to this life to suffer.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that in part, it's our education who taught us that those failures and mistakes have to carry suffering along with them. Yeah. I don't agree with this. It doesn't mean I don't suffer. It doesn't mean I'm not in fear. What I'm trying to say is that I figured out that it wouldn't make sense to be here to suffer, although we do. We are here really to have an experience.
And it wouldn't make sense to come here and just have total joy, would it? I mean, just to come here and have eternal bliss, that wouldn't work either particularly, would it really?
But people that have studied this more than us, or than me at least, they say that actually there's also joy in learning or in failing. There's joy in learning. You know what I mean? We don't have, to your point, we don't have to be in bliss all the time, right? Huh. What a bliss. I mean, we are like, you know, what the climax, you know?
Well, there has to be the color. There has to be the up and down.
Exactly.
You have to push against something to achieve something, and then you get the sense of achievement.
Exactly. You know, so every failure is like we have this light bulb
Yeah.
coming out. Every failure is, we have this light bulb. Oh, okay. I learned that lesson now. Okay. Yeah. I understand now. I understand what I have to do. I understand how to play the rules of the game.
Yeah.
So I think that we have to learn the rules of the game. I think that, again, the formal education does not teach us the rules of the game. I wish someone did teach us.
I wish they did teach the rules of the game properly. I really wish they did. It just seems so weird that we've known these rules for a long time and we just don't teach them. But
exactly. I agree.
Well, Angel, thank you so much for being with me today. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. And I wish you all the best. And I'm sure we will keep in touch and speak again.
Absolutely, we will. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me here today. And obviously, I appreciate everybody who's listening to us today. Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, all the best.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Angel Rebo. If you would like to connect with Angel, you can find him at divinehumanventures.com. You can find him on LinkedIn. You can also find all of his social links at linkflow.io, the CEO Confident. Now, those links are available on the show notes above. They're also available at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. So if you caught my program at the weekend, you will know I have been exploring inspiration and podcasts. You know, why do we listen to podcasts? It's quite an interesting exploration about what it is we get from listening to podcasts. So I would really like you to listen to that show, of course. But you know what? The basic premise is I am looking to see how to develop this program and what it is you're looking for or looking to discover when you go searching for a podcast. So look, there's a survey, which is 10 quick questions, no email address required. It takes just 5 minutes. You can find it at the link above in the show notes or on Life, Passion and Business, of course. And I just want to remind you, if you are enjoying a podcast, any podcast, mine or anyone else's, do reach out and thank your content creators. Because I can really assure you, when you reach out and just follow, like, share, or do something for a content creator, it is so rewarding. It really feels like, you know, we're putting something out there and we're getting something back. So if you can support your podcast creators, I really urge you to do so. It is so, so appreciated. And that is it from me this week. So thank you, as always, for your time and attention. And I'll catch you later. All the best.